What's up, you guys? I'm John here with Johnny.
Yes, sir.
And we are back for episode 115 of Talk About That, the podcast.
Man, aren't we tired of each other yet, it seems?
I'm very tired.
Yeah. And it's 1,000 degrees today.
I know.
And which that should help with everything. You know, that's what we needed. We needed a heat wave to throw on top of everything else. Just to calm everybody down. You know, cooler heads will prevail, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is supposed to, like, kill the virus more if it's hot, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. So that's what we need to be out there.
I'm not an epidemiologist, but I am proud that I said the word because it's a difficult word to say.
It is. So. It seems like everyone thinks that they're epidemiologists now. You know, because if you post a meme about Corona, you're a qualified expert now. I think that's fascinating and fantastic and not at all contributing to the problem. But that's social media, man. That's the deal. That's part of the deal. It's weird, too, because I feel like when I step away from it, I have that FOMO. You know, it's like, well, what am I just burying my head in the sand if I don't partake of this? But then when you partake of it, it's like you get this weird... I don't know, man. I don't know if it's... I feel bad when I do and bad when I don't use it. So, I don't know. We're just in it now. It's part of the world, I guess.
Yeah, I do. There's a real, like... my daughter, you know, who is about to turn 12, is, like, dying for social media. And I'm just like, oh, man. In fact, her friends told her, it's just going to make your life worse, you know? And I was like, hey...
But that doesn't help when you're a kid. An adult says that or something. It's just going to be awful. You don't know. And then we're like, yeah, but I see adults doing it. I want to do it.
Right. So we say to her, as her mom and I both are on it, you know,
you don't need social media. Here, smoke this cigarette. You just give her some other some other vice to get plugged into. So I'll tell you this. This happened to me yesterday. I had my first show in front of people last night.
Yeah, in Franklin, right?
Franklin, Tennessee, which I think it was the first show back. In other words, the first like ticketed event where people came. And they were socially distanced. There were
like in the country?
In Franklin, for sure. Because I asked the guy who put it on. It's a comedian friend of mine named Paul Aldrich. And it was interesting. I wanted to be a part of it because he had asked so many, like some of these Christian music pioneers were there. Like, Steve and Annie Chapman. Were like founders of like the Jesus movement. Like they were the house band when the Jesus movement was happening. And they are the most charming couple. And I could tell you all about them. But anyway, it was a fascinating show. Rob Frazier, who, you know, had his own solo career, but wrote like 150 songs with Steve Camp, who I know you know, and Reggie, who will be our guest later. He knows Steve very well. But yeah, man, so that was pretty cool. And it was just interesting to hear people laugh again. And it was kind of a healing moment for me. I had a really good time and everybody was staying safe, as safe as we could without kind of bunkering down. I think we were definitely venturing out. Some people would say that probably was ill-advised, but I felt like we've had our 2.5-3 months of being hunkered down and we're kind of trying to stick our head out of the foxhole. So people were there. It was probably about 50 people.
Yeah.
And they were laughing and I felt good to be a part of the proceedings. So hopefully we're inching towards normalcy, hopefully.
Yeah. No, that's real good.
I've been running in my neighborhood wearing a mask because I wanted to look like I'm stealing exercise. That's one thing I said last night in my show. I like for it to look like I'm trying to just steal exercise. Oh, and another thing I said, because I feel like I had to kind of address what was happening, but I didn't want to get political, but I did say that I read a story, and this is just something I read. But I read a story that from 7 to 8 a.m., some of these stores are going to start letting, if you're over 65, they're going to let you loot in that hour. So I think that's pretty, you know, I think that's very progressive, you know, just let the old people come in first.
That's very nice.
Get what they need. Yeah.
Yeah, this generational discrimination. I mean, I like that they're pulling down the walls, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's a good one, Johnny. So they laughed, and I know you were like, I'm trying to remember how to tell my jokes.
Oh,
like,
man, there was a couple.
It's like riding a bike.
It was better than I thought it would be. I flipped a couple of words a couple times. My main thing was when you flip the word on the premise, don't let them see you go back and get it because then it'll start a snowball effect of, you know what I'm saying? It's like the audience won't know until you go, well, I forgot all my jokes. So I made up my mind that even if it happened, which it did a couple of times where I got a little bit tangled, I just kept plowing through and then it just kind of felt like I got back in a groove. So it definitely wasn't perfect. I haven't watched the video from it, but it felt a lot better than I thought it would. Cause I mean, we're talking about my last show was February 29th.
Wow.
So it's a long time. That's what I was telling people. It takes about 10 years to get good at comedy and it takes about 2 weeks off to get bad at it. And,
so let me see, that was the day after we were together in Wisconsin. That's when you bolted from the conference I was speaking at to go selfishly make money in another state. And you could have stayed. We could have shared.
I was at the lovely Delphi Opera House. And that was a fantastic show. And I did not know at that point that it was going to be my last show for 3 months, but it was.
Wow. Wow.
So we're trying to get back in the saddle.
Well, it's fitting, though, because you love opera and you have a background.
I love opera, and my show's very operatic. And so you want to give the people what they want. I try to hit the high notes, and I wear very tight clothing. That helps.
Well, I'm really glad you got to do a show. Seriously, man. I mean, I know it's a big deal.
I know you sat in judgment of me. You were like, oh, boy, John. Well, that's the last lunch I have with Johnny because now he's exposing himself to. I don't know if I exposed myself. I exposed myself to the virus. I didn't expose
myself. I went to Franklin and exposed myself to 50 people.
I don't know why the papers were there. It was weird. Tell you what. Some people will do anything to get in the news.
You know, man, listen, it's like I say to our staff all the time, you know, with this is invisible and everyone's doing the best they can. And there are some people who are super brave and they could be wrong or right in their reasoning. And then the outcome could be good or bad, unrelated to what the reasoning was. So maybe it's not in that place where you were and it was totally safe. Or maybe it was and you just got to do the best you can someplace.
I'm of the mindset of both. And I think the precautions and the lockdowns were necessary to keep it from getting way worse. And it's time to start inching back towards with precautions. Time to start figuring out how we can restart things and people can get back to work. So I think both. I think that people that want to say, we didn't even need to do any of this, I think that's a little bit too far. But I mean, again, these are all opinions. I mean, it's going to be years and years of study after the fact till we really know about this. And there's a lot of bias on both sides. But I don't know, man. To me, it just felt good to make people laugh again. And I know people really, I could feel in the crowd that people needed it. And I had a lot of people tell me after the show, they needed it. And they were behind a wall of thick glass as they told me that. And I said, you need to stand back, ma'am. And I maced them as I ran to my car. One thing I did do, I followed Rob, my buddy Rob Harris, who's a singer-songwriter, and he had COVID. So he told his story of getting sick and recovering from it. And he had a long recovery. And I was right after him. And I used the same mic as him. And I walked out and I said, listen, a lot of people, they said that they would give us wipes to wipe down the mic or use a separate mic. And I said, I have no fear because Rob has already had it. And he gave me a transfusion of his blood in the background backstage before I came out. So I feel like I'm totally immune now. And
also, whatever superpowers he has.
That's right. Now, whatever. I can play the guitar better because he's a better guitar player than me. I had so many song ideas.
Keep having dreams that he has. It's very strange.
That's right.
What was that? I remember that.
So, yeah, exactly.
You know, we know all about transfusions here. We'll talk about that, obviously. Very medically sound podcast. So,
do not recommend. We cannot condone the use of transfusions to ward off COVID. I don't know.
Well, hey, guys, thanks for listening today. We are like super excited and also, I think there's a degree of levity to a lot of things happening in our nation today. And I know Johnny and I were talking yesterday on our last episode. Some of the things that had happened with George Floyd and with protests, they were like just kind of beginning to happen right then. And we mentioned it in the last podcast, but we kind of mentioned it. And now we don't record this on the day that it comes out. And so
we recorded it earlier in the week and then everything really got escalated. And so it almost looked like we just took like this glancing shot at it. Sometimes I think people get more upset when we just focus on one issue that they feel like they've been hammered over the head with. And sometimes I feel like people expect us to comment on whatever's happening. And obviously you have to kind of show your listeners that you live in the same planet that they do or whatever, you know? So it's almost dumb not to go like, hey, there's protests in every major city in America and abroad, you know? Let's talk about this, but that really wasn't happening when we were recording last week. So important to note that.
Yeah. And so we, you know, this week we really felt that it would, we have we're learning, I think, is a big thing. We want to listen and learn. And we have a really trusted friend who's been on the podcast before, who Johnny and I have both. I've written several books with this friend, and Johnny's done multiple shows and events with this friend. And he is a voice to multiple generations. And he travels the world up to now, I'd say probably 300 days a year, and is just in public schools a lot, offering hope. He also does a lot of events where he shares the gospel and the hope of Christ. And it's our friend, Mr. Reggie Dabbs. And we just wanted to welcome Reggie to talk about that. How you doing, Reg?
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. You guys doing all right today?
So good.
Yeah, man. So good. Couldn't be better.
Yeah, I don't know. I maybe I oversold it. It's good to hear Reggie's voice and see Reggie.
Oh, that's funny. You're still getting over that blood transfusion, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, listen, it affects some people. You know, it takes time. And so that's what we're all three going to do at the end of the show. There will be you'll get into it. You'll like it.
Okay. Okay. I think my wife is going to call me after this is over real fast.
Go. Yeah. Why are you friends with them? That's what she'll say.
It's good to see you, boys.
Yeah, man.
Man, good to see you too. Good to see you too. It's always a pleasure. Reggie's one of our favorite people on the planet, and man, you do. You just bring hope and joy to everybody, and you're just a good friend. And we just appreciate you lending your time to what we're doing today. I will tell the listeners, we don't always talk about this, but technologically, everything possible that could have stopped this from happening happened on this. This is actually our second day of attempting this, and so Reg has been super patient with it. And once we all restarted our computers, that seemed to make a difference. But I asked Reggie, hey,
what's
man.
What's wrong with when you haven't started your computer since 1998?
Dude, me neither. I just shut the lid. Shut the lid.
I hope you boys don't just shut the lid on the toilet, but you also flush it. Like, you know, you're going to have to. Nope.
I have not restarted my toilet in I can't tell you how long.
Flushed. I thought that was automatic once it got to a certain height.
Yeah, you gotta.
I thought that was a light switch, not a handle. No, I mean it does mean a lot to us that you would come and be a part of it. And Reg, you know, there's just a lot happening in the world right now, and obviously, you know, man, this is Johnny and I were talking, and so was me and Reggie off the air, and a couple of disclaimers on all this. Like, number one, you know. Reggie doesn't get to, he doesn't have to educate all the white people in the world on what's happening. That'd be a pretty tall task here, Reg. And we're not asking you to speak for an entire community of people or any of those things. But we do want to like honor and listen and grow and just have these conversations that we know, much like Johnny was talking about, everybody's differing opinions on the quarantine and COVID and all those things. There's a lot of different opinions out there. And so I think what we do on this podcast is we try to talk about more than one side. We try to listen. We certainly have opinions. And, you know, in this case, we want to listen and maybe offer some insight that would bring hope and growth and, you know, perspective that will help us all grow. And so we just appreciate you kind of helping us along on that. And so, hey, man, I would just start by saying, since all this happened, I know you and I were talking last week. Just give us your perspectives on what your life has been like as a black man in America in the last 2 weeks and what's happened in your world.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, and I decided right when this all took place that I would not remain silent. At social media, all the outlets and stuff that you have, you're able to post things and say things that could even help someone. Pretty much 70-75% of the people who follow me on all the social outlets have said, dude, that's great. Thank you for teaching me. I didn't know that. Thank you very much. But there's about 25% who have totally, you know, what do you think you are? You should stick up for your own race. And this dude literally thought I was white.
Wow.
How does that happen? It's not like I get up and every time I start any kind of meeting, I say, hey, my name's Reggie. I'm black and this is going to be Black Sunday. I mean, dude, it's funny how people have a certain think about you after a while. They put you in a certain box after a while. But and I don't mind. I come on, dude. I'm a thick skinned brother. Come on. I grew up in this thing. I'm 56 years old, and I'm an ordained minister in the Assembly of God. Hey, I was there before it was even popular to have a black guy there. So I understand all this stuff. I got this, but somebody has to move the line. And I'm going to tell you, it might have started with COVID, because everybody, the big debate was COVID-19. Is it real? Is it not? Should we social distance? It's just a ploy. It's the government. It's the government. And we thought that was a hot debate until one day. Mm-hmm. And actually, it wasn't one day until like this whole thing started about 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when Aubrey was running through the street and that video came out. And then everybody started going back, and then they went back to Breonna. Then here comes Mr. Floyd, and then all that stuff. And it's like, that's it. Forget Corona. We got a bigger problem. And it's good that we do this. I know a lot of people are like, good. How could you say good? How could you say good? Look at all the bad things that come out of this. You see, it's like if I said, I love oranges. I love oranges. That's my favorite fruit, oranges. And then somebody go, well, what about apples? What about mangoes? How could you leave them out? The whole thing with Black Lives Matter. When people said that, all the people come up, no, you're wrong. All lives matter. And I love the way a pastor put it one time. He goes, when you say Black Lives Matter and everybody else says all lives matter, it goes back to there's a fire on your street. And everybody says, then the firemen should put water on all the houses in the whole neighborhood. And then we'll be all right. But all the houses aren't burning. There's only one house that's on fire. And if they come and put water on all the other houses, they're not going to put out the fire in the right way on the one that's really actually burning. Yeah. So the reason that they use Black Lives Matter is because that's the house that's burning right now.
Absolutely. And you know, Reg, that's an important point, because I think the true like center of the debate in terms of, especially on social media, which I have mixed feelings about that being the place that all of these conversations are happening, because I already am suspicious that good conversations can happen there. I mean, good messages can be put out there, but good conversations are different than good messages. And one of the things that, I mean, I'm sure that the social scientists have a lot of names for it, but I mean, I call it like it's diversionary sidestepping. Like, I got to make a diversion, and it's always a what about. In fact, I'll confess that I've said that on the podcast before. When the Black Lives Matter movement first arose, as a history teacher, I remember sitting with my wife or watching TV. This is probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I had that feeling of, wow, okay, you know, like I began to get technical, like, well, you know, what is this? And I remember over the course of several conversations with her, and again, hey guys, thank God I didn't go to social media with this, because I was completely wrong. I just wasn't there yet. I was trying to figure out, okay, what's happening here? And obviously, you know, I was having a conversation with a staff member this week. Obviously, yes, all lives should matter. To your point, all lives should matter. But what we're seeing here is things that are happening in our nation where there are certain communities, and this one in particular, the Black community, where the country's systemic issues and policies over time, and no, it's not all cops, and no, it's not all white people. Like, we want to make it all and all, and look at this and look at this, and what about this and what about this? And what my wife finally said to me, she says, hey, the one thing you're not doing right now is you're not listening to what they're asking you to listen to. Someone is saying they're hurting, and that something, their experience is different than yours. And all you want to do is ask questions and come up with other things. And it really smacked me right in the face and changed my entire viewpoint. Like, hey, are we listening to people who are saying I'm hurting? In fact, I did hear a preacher say it this morning. He said, if you want to say all lives matter every time someone says Black Lives Matter, he goes, look, if your wife comes to you and after 10 years of marriage and says, listen, I feel like you don't love me anymore. I'm really struggling. Would you be like, look, I told you 10 years ago, it's obvious that I love you. You know, like we don't know.
Yeah. Would you say like, I love everybody?
Yeah, exactly. It's obvious.
Of course I love you, baby. I love everybody.
Yeah. You'd be like, you'd listen to what she was saying, regardless of trying to make it logical or trying to find some sort of other way around it to listen. And so,
yeah, it's funny. The Corona thing tied with this and how Reggie kind of drew that parallel about how one thing kind of overtook the other in the news cycle. One of the things I read yesterday from one of my black friends, it said, everybody thinks the thing that Corona and racism, systemic racism, have in common is everybody thought it was fake unless somebody in your household had it happen to them.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, yeah, it's like it hits home when, yep, you know, like, man, listen, watching these stories I made up my mind this week. I was going to just listen and post and amplify other voices, and not just let that be some, you know, social trend that we're all going to just hop on, but like, let's really do this. And man, some of the stuff I read just broke my heart. And some of the videos I watched broke my heart. And so, yeah.
If we go back just 10 days ago, 11 days ago, 12 days ago, and we come to now, yesterday, the commissioner of the NFL gets up and apologizes for the taking a knee thing. I should have never made everybody take a knee. Because now his eyes are more open than it was when Kaepernick did it the first time. And he's right. Like, we got to do something better. We got to be better. I wasn't listening then, but I'm listening now. And for everybody, there's always going to be people. I'm telling you, when you guys put this out there, somebody's going to be mad. They're going to send you guys emails. You're going to have to respond. And that's all good. At least they listen. At least they heard something. And if you have to put "but" in any of the things that we're saying today, first of all, hold on. First of all, I want you to know I ain't Martin Luther King Jr. I'm not Nelson Mandela. I don't know all the answers, but I can tell you this. Two things coming from a black man's perspective. Number one, when I saw the video of that policeman's leg on top of Mr. Floyd's neck, I didn't see Mr. Floyd. I saw Dominic, my 26-year-old son. I saw me. I saw Reggie. I saw the kids who call me Uncle Reggie, who from London, England, who are black and Jamaican and from Nairobi and they're from all these different places and they're darker skin. I saw all these people there. So, and number two is this. You can't take that away from me. It's the way I'm inbred. My son, when we learned how to drive, when we got, okay, you're good driving. Here's what I need you to do. First thing you get in the car, what do? He'll say, take your wallet out of your back pocket and put it on the console by the gear shift. Why are we doing that? In case you get pulled over, you don't reach in your back pocket and you're not reaching for anything. What do if you get pulled over? Roll down all four windows as fast as possible if it's electric and put your hands on the steering wheel and don't take them off. All these things he was taught to do before I taught him to put on your seatbelt.
Man.
Sometimes it's more than just putting on your seatbelt that's going to save your life. But I don't expect you guys to understand that. It's how I grew up. It's my thing. I'm just asking that you do me a favor and just pause for a second and note this. And I'll say it. I know it's like out there, but they say white privilege. And a lot of people think it's like, here's what people think. There are more white Caucasian people than dark people in America, in the world. That's not white privilege. Or people are saying, well, I grew up poor. I ain't white privileged. That ain't it. Here's what it is. When any white person, boy or girl, was born, let's say there are 10 doors that can make their life successful. They can walk through any 10 of those doors and it's going to be good. That's fine. But if any kid is born, white or black, black or dark like me, there are only 6 doors they can walk through. And behind those 6 is somebody holding the handle trying to make sure they don't turn that knob. Now, you can believe that if you want. You can debate that if you want. But here's the deal. A man with an experience is never at the mercy of a man with an argument. Y'all can argue all day long, but I've been pulled over many times. I know. I was at a big outdoor music event, and this was just last year, and I got pulled over. And when I got pulled over, the guy goes, you are going too fast. You're going too fast. I said, speed limit's 45. He goes, yeah. I said, I'm sorry. I'll take the ticket. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I wasn't going too fast because I was told by the people who brought me in when I said, I got on the phone before I left the garage at the rental car place and said, hey, look, I'm on my way. I'll be there in a minute. They go, when you get to this town, you need to slow down because they'll pull anybody over just for the fun of it. And they gave me this big black SUV, tinted window, Yukon, all black. And I know. And so I didn't even think about it. It's no big deal. Like, what's $125 on a guy who makes money like me who hadn't had a check since March? March 2nd. Oh, that's okay. So what I did, I get to the event. I do it. I do my part, my sermon. When I get done, there's a meet and greet. This guy shook my hand and says, hey, I'm going to walk with you to your rental car. Can you give me the ticket that you just got today? And I looked at him and said, excuse me? How do you know I got a ticket? Because I'm a sheriff. I'm sorry. Just give it to me. I'll take care of it. So I gave it to him and let him take care of it. Now, last one before you guys talk to me. Here's the deal. I know people do wrong. I know people mess up. I know people deserve to go to jail. I know the police are good. I know they're here to serve and protect. But here's all I'm saying, and I'm going to say it the way my friend TDJ says it. If I rob somebody, put me in jail. If I commit a murder, arrest me. If I do anything wrong, you can arrest me. You can put handcuffs and arrest me. But please do not put me in handcuffs on the street. Arrest me on the street. Try me on the street. Convict me on the street. And kill me on the street. Mm-hmm. Let me have my due process. That's the problem. It doesn't matter what that man did. No matter how he raised or what he did in the past. He deserved to have justice, and there was none for him. That's what I'm saying.
Completely agree, Reg. When I saw that man, and I said this in my message last week at church, when I saw that man calling out for his mom, with handcuffs on, put him in the car if you think he did something wrong and take him. 9 minutes, man. I started getting even text messages from people. I mean, it's such a tragedy, but it's so because of the video. And that's the disturbing part as well. It's because of the video that we know about this.
Right.
It's even because
the video, it was already being swept under the rug when the video came out. And they had to face these two white guys chased down a jogger while a third white guy filmed it. We got to do something about this. It was already in the process of being swept under the rug when that video came out. That's why they had to act.
And I think that again, for those of us to say, and yes, this is that hard part of all or nothing, everything being, either or for us, instead of both and, is that, look, it doesn't mean that all governments or DAs or police or judges or all, it doesn't mean all, but it does mean that it is happening at such a higher and more alarming rate within the Black community. That when we just keep saying, it's probably not happening. You're dead on, Reg. I completely agree. And we want, I want to not be adversarial in my mindset to the plight of others from a history perspective, historically. And this has been really, really hard, I think, in the debate. You know, somebody said the other day, like, all right, look, it may have been you, Reg, that told me this. Hey, okay, sure, 1960s, the Civil Rights Acts were passed, and on paper and legally, that ended Jim Crow laws, and now, supposedly there's equal rights, and it ended segregation. But someone said to me, imagine if you went to, 100-yard, or maybe you went to a cross-country race, and someone got a 40-minute head start. And then you finally said, no, you can't go. Okay, you can go. Now it's a fair race. Now it's right. A fair race because, you get to run as fast as anybody else. And, and I still don't think, by the way, that things are fair even after those laws are passed. But that was just their metaphor for, helping understand it. Do you think it's still a fair race if you get a 40-minute late start? 400 years of enslavement of a race of people is like, man, I think that for us to be like, oh, it's all fine now. And that is, and even from a historical standpoint, some of this has to do in the South, especially, is what they call the lost cause. The lost cause, that was a term coined actually by those at the end of the Confederacy. They begin to say, look, even if we lose this, we're going to always have this idea that this wasn't, and the lost cause had these couple things. We're gonna deify Robert E. Lee and say he was just trying to be honorable to what he believed in. And we're gonna say that the North only had more superior firepower. It's the only reason that they won it, and greater numbers of soldiers. But a big part of it was, is we're gonna make this not about slavery. That was a big part of, it was a very intentional propaganda almost type move on their part. to say, you know, we're going to make this not about slavery. This was about states' rights, or this was about other things. I'm not saying states' rights weren't a part, but they've kind of, it's a rewrite of history that even I was raised with.
Right. They hijacked the narrative.
Yeah. Like, as if that people don't understand that it was absolutely about slavery, specifically slavery spreading to the new states in the West that were coming into the Union, whether they're going to be slave states or free states. And so, like, we've, that, that you, you fast forward 100 years, man, what that does is it begins to convince people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh man, this is not an issue. And I'll say this, Reggie, I want you to talk about it because you mentioned Nelson Mandela. I would love you to tell us your story, by the way, your Nelson Mandela story, because it's one of my favorite stories, and we haven't written about it yet, but I think it's going to be time here soon. When I was growing up, we learned about apartheid in South Africa in school. And I remember this as a white kid in the South, I can remember thinking that that was like a foreign country that was so different than us.
Yeah, because it felt like another planet. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we ended that so long ago in my mind too. And, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, like, oh man, the 60s, that was an eternity ago. That's all done. We were kind of taught that that's all done, you know, and, where I think a lot of people like me, a lot of white people are kind of coming to grips with the fact that, hey guys, we may not have legal segregation, but there is most certainly still systemic racism happening in our country that we have not been addressing. As I'm not, and again, it's not that people think being not a racist is enough. And I'm going to get to that towards the end of our call. Like, I don't think not being a racist is enough anymore. I think, especially as a believer, like I believe that the call to end the evil of racism, because Jesus came to destroy the works of the evil one, which is what the work of his church is. This is a work of the evil one. And this is like an evil thing that none of us would endure in terms of, in theory, but in practice, when it becomes like you're in that hot tub, you don't realize how hot it's gotten, that this is actually happening around you, that, you know, helping people grow into that spot. So I'd love you to talk about your experiences in South Africa and apartheid and Nelson Mandela.
It's cool because it opened the door that even still today, I get to go back to South Africa and do schools and public schools all over that incredible South Africa, over in Kenya. I get to do all over. But it was near this time. It was around this time. I think next week is Juneteenth. And that's when they celebrate in a small community, black community outside of Johannesburg. There was this huge just protest. And they came in, and then during that apartheid moment, they slaughtered all these young people, killed them all. Well, they have a rally for that, just to remember that and stuff. And I was doing a school tour, and I was invited to speak at the rally. So I'm there, and I'm speaking at the rally, and not knowing that Nelson Mandela was there. But I didn't even know that his daughter had heard me speak earlier that week and was like, Grandpa, it was his granddaughter. And she's like, Grandpa, you got to come here. You got to come here, this man. And so I do my part, and it went really well. Played saxophone. Everybody's dancing, singing. When I come out, he's there. And the one thing that I remember vividly that he said, that I realized that it was a quote that he made and he kept making over and over again. He said this: it is in your hands to make a better world for all who live in it. It's in your hands to make a better world. And he goes, and he took my hands and he goes, you're doing your part. Keep doing your part. And other things. And it's cool. We got to eat fried chicken. I made him laugh. It was funny though. But what I do know is that, and from him to now, and when I went home after that meeting with him and started reading his history, how that he was like, really, man, we got to get equality. And he did wrong. He was on the violent side of it all. But then he went to prison. And when he came out, he said this, and here's another quote that I really love: we must strive to be moved by a generosity of spirit that will enable us to outgrow the hatred and conflict of our past. And that's what he did. And then that led him to become the president of South Africa and to make a movement that's moving this still today. And quotes that I use, especially now, all the time of his. And it's important because he also said this: it's always seems impossible until it's done. Mm. And this whole thing is seem impossible until it's done. Now, fast, let me give both of you the biblical stand. And it's crazy that when Jesus went to the well to get, and he waited for this woman, the Bible says Jesus was passing through this town, went to this famous well. He sent there, he sent the disciples in town to get food. And a woman came at noon to draw water. And he asked her, can you give me something to drink? And she said, why are you asking me for a drink? Because Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Boom. There it is. Now, I started breaking this thing down. Here's what I'm breaking down. First of all, why did Jesus send the disciples away knowing that this woman was going to come in a few minutes? Maybe he knew that they would put up a fight if she even had a conversation with him because of who she was and where she was from. Then let's take it on this. Take it to a whole nother story, because that word Samaritan, we all know, because they call it the Good Samaritan. When he ended up helping a man who was beaten and robbed. When Jesus tells this story, he uses the people that we adore the most. Pastor walked by on the other side. A Levite who is a worship, that's the guy who sings in the temple before the priest preaches, walked by on the other side. And then there was a Samaritan. The definition of a Samaritan is a common, ordinary man or woman who rises above the circumstances around them to do right. Who rise above the prejudice around them to do right. And that's what we're talking about. No matter who people, what they look like, we have to choose to rise above the prejudice around us to do right. When Jesus was going to the cross, after he was beaten, they put the tree on him and he started walking down that road, heading to Calvary to die for the sins of the world. When he stumbled and could not walk no more, the soldier pointed out a man to help carry that cross. And it's biblically and literally, history writes, it was a black man who was the first human who felt the blood of Jesus for the salvation of the world. Now, I know some of you are like, whoa, wait a minute, that's too much. I'm just giving you something to think about today. But the bottom line is, if he's the one that helped Jesus get to the point to where he could steal the keys to death, hell, and the grave, and if he was black the way the history books say he was, no wonder the devil is pushing this. He's trying to win the best way that he can a war that he's already lost. And we're not going to let that happen, because we're going to move in love and generosity to bring hope.
Yes, sir.
Reggie, I would love to hear you talk about, because here's what I do know in that whole diversionary sidestepping thing with white people is what especially the older generation, and this is by design, I think, from the media, all they see is the rioting.
Yeah.
And they, that the destruction and violence cancels out their empathy for this. And they see it real simply, even though it's super, super complex.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, if they don't know, that there's organizations like Antifa, which are historically anti-fascist, which means they were historically communist, which is where that came from, who are sending in people into cities, paying them to go and start fires and
right to undermine everything.
Right. And the idea is to do exactly what's happening. That is to get people to not pay attention to this other thing. I'll say this, Reg, I don't know if you know this. I went to the Nashville rally, about 10,000 people there. The mayor was there, state representatives, multiple pastors spoke. I went and stood to mourn, the injustice and the death of George Floyd with the black community. Laura and I went.
Good.
And dude, that night then there was rioting about 2 miles away by other people. Now they could have been there as well, but it's so easy to be like, oh, okay. And then someone turns on the television and they're like, well, that's right. What all of this is. It's like, guys, right. I was there. Like, I am one of those people you're saying that's all this is. And that's what's good about being somewhere, like actually going somewhere and standing with somebody,
yeah,
is it stops being some media. Nobody can twist that media for me. I was there. Nobody there while I was there for the actual rally did any sort of property damage. Nobody, we were just there standing, for something that mattered. And I think I'd love to hear, Reggie, your take on that. Maybe, and I'm trying to be sensitive because it makes me a little bit mad sometimes, because it's like just a good excuse to not engage. To say, like you said, the but. Well, yeah, I mourn George Floyd, but doesn't give you the right, like we cancel out one evil because we have another evil that's more important to us instead of like dealing with both of them. And so I'm not pro destruction. I'm not pro rioting. I don't even think, in fact, I saw videos of Black Lives Matter leaders begging the people who were doing destruction to stop in Nashville. And I heard the guy say, they will blame us for this. We're not even doing this, you know. And
yeah, I mean, the guy who lit the Capitol City Hall on fire was a white dude.
Well, yeah. I mean, tons of them. And again, I hate to make it all racial because I'm not saying there's not a black person doing damage. Like you said, anybody can have criminal behavior.
Well, in the same way that we're not saying all cops are bad, but it's like the bad apples can undermine your cause. And it's that's the thing. It does dilute the message.
Well, I mean, yeah. Reg, what do you think? What do you say when white people are really struggling? They're watching the news. They're scared. They're scared. They're watching the news. They're scared. And they go, see, this whole thing is about violence and perpetuating violence. Look at all the rioting. That's why I'm not engaging in this conversation emotionally. What would you say to them?
Help them. I would tell them is look at your clock on your arm or on the wall and compare it with the rallies. Everything that happens from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. is peaceful. But once it gets dark, that's when the bad things start happening. If it's that way in the physical, it's that way in the spiritual. So during the day, while the sun is up, I'm not talking about the S-U-N, I'm talking about the S-O-N. Everything is good. But once darkness really comes, it starts bringing out the madness in a man or a woman's soul. And you have to understand, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's good. I am saying it's human nature. If you don't pay attention, I'm going to get your attention. If you don't listen to what we're trying to say, then and then you got young people. Some young people have no moral compass, none whatsoever. And they got somebody whispering, hey, they did it to us. Let's make them pay. Let's go down to Gucci. Let's go down to Louis Vuitton. Let's take back what they stole from us right here. Right now, you don't understand that mentality because you don't live there. But if there's somebody who used to live there and now they're out, they look back and go, man, these kids, they got to slow down and we have to do whatever we can to bring them up to speed on where they should be in our world. Hopefully you understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one thing you've taught us really well today is that if nothing else, it does begin with realizing, hey, you are thinking differently because you have a different experience. Doesn't mean, like you said, that you didn't experience poverty or difficulty. I know that's been a hard thing for some of the older white people that I know and love is that white privilege idea has been, well, I was raising the projects. Hey, I was very poor, you know, and to say, yeah, it's not about not having a strike against you. It's that race was not one of the strikes against you. Because of the color of your skin, it didn't make it harder on you. You may have had it really hard, but that was just not one of the variables. And so it's not like white privilege is something that you choose or something that you're guilty of saying. I mean, you can be guilty of prejudice, but that's not really what privilege is. Privilege just means because of the color of my skin, I have a different experience than a person with a different color of the skin. And
well, even learning about racism versus experiencing it is white privilege. Like me and John get to go learn about racism. Like it's our class project. You know what I'm saying? I read something about that this week that, you know, white parents are getting on Twitter and being like, how do I explain this to my 6-year-old? And this was a black parent that said, look, I don't have that ability. I have to tell my 5-year-old there are people who are going to hate you just because of the color of your skin. I don't get to avoid the subject.
Right.
And that's privilege.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sensing among people. And Reg, you were talking about everybody's already up in arms over COVID, you know, and already struggling and scared, and this being this new thing. And people are like really fatigued. They're very, very fatigued. And, you know, Laura and I will be sitting in bed and we're like, as fatigued as we feel, like we have the luxury to express that. We have the luxury to say, you know what, I think I'm going to take a night off from this and not turn on the news or whatever. But for so many people in our country, they don't ever get that luxury to turn off the news because it's not the news. It's their neighborhood.
Yeah,
it's what's happening in their lives. And that's where that empathy from a gospel perspective. Look, if you're not a believer, I mean, man, you know, that's a different probably, I can't speak to that if you're not someone who's a person of faith. And we have people who don't, they may not be believers listening to our podcast. I mean, you're so welcome here. We're not saying it's better or worse. We're just saying, man, the hope that we have in Christ is what compels me to say, I will listen to the voice of those who are being mistreated. I will, like Reggie just said, cross racial lines. The Samaritan woman story is so, it made Jesus's own disciples so uncomfortable. Why are you talking to her? It crossed gender and racial lines in such a really radical way that we miss in our modern context. But that is the call of discipleship, not just to do this. Yes, there are other things, but this certainly included. And so when I realize that, when I'm coming to grips with white privilege a little more, then there's a question of now what? And I'm going to say one more thing, Reggie, and I want you to speak to it. And then Johnny, take us into that question that you had. What I think I'm frustrated with in my own life, and even not just with this, with a lot of things, is when new information comes to someone, when new information you didn't have before comes to you, then you have a choice to integrate it into your perspective and to begin to do something different. And I've seen in my own life, and I certainly see right now, that there's a lot of new information and people are kind of taking it and again, they're denying it, or in some cases they're accepting part of it, yet refusing to change their perspective or their behaviors because of it. And the essence of being a disciple, if you're a disciple, the essence of it means follower, which means I walk after you and I listen to what you're saying. I watch what you're doing and I keep changing. Jesus kept discipling. It wasn't like after year one with his disciples, he's like, well, y'all got it. Now just do what I do. The whole time he's rebuking them, the whole time he's teaching them and encouraging them. Like the entire time, the idea was keep following me into new places. This is always going to be a place that you can't go on your own. So if you hear new things and you don't integrate it into new perspectives and behaviors and words, then you got to stop and ask the question, why? Like if you're hearing, if George Floyd affected you emotionally, and a lot of white people, it did, because this is undeniable atrocity. Now, that's new information. What do I do with it? How do I process it differently? Or do I just stick with an old mindset that may have been based off of old information? And then I think we're all scared, like, oh my gosh, what if I was wrong? The essence of being a Christian is admitting that you are wrong and that you need Jesus. Like it's the whole thing. It's the one condition of salvation is that you admit that you need it. The one condition of being rescued and being transformed is you admit that you need rescuing and you need to be transformed. So I'd love to hear, Johnny, and you were talking about that kind of off the air. Take us into that question you had, and Reggie, feel free to respond to both of these.
Hey, yeah, John, for yours, Martin Luther King said it, and for what you just said, John, he said this. He said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
Wow.
And we're right there. And if you know, like a lot of people are like, well, why are y'all causing such a problem now? Why didn't you do it last time? I believe it was God's perfect storm that took place with the people who have died before. And I know a lot of people are like, God did this? God, no. It's us to use God to hear his voice, to hear his leading us to change what happened wrong yesterday. We have to hear his voice so we can be the change. And that's what he's saying here. It's the, right. It's the silence of our friends. We cannot remain silent. That's what we're about to talk about. But our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. I have a niece and a nephew who live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mm. And I saw my nephew's beautiful afro underneath that dude's foot. So we can't remain silent. That's where we're at. And I'm glad. I love the rainbow of people in all the protests during the day. I loved it. I had the facts that they were red and yellow, black and white. They were all walking with a sign going down the street. I love that. And we just got to take those pictures and keep promoting them because we can live that way.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it's good. And man, the thing about now that I wanted to ask you, this idea of becoming quote unquote politically active, because I think that's such a that's such a hot button thing to say. It's almost like, well, I liked you before you became political. It usually doesn't mean you became political. It means you voiced an opinion that made me uncomfortable. And people have become, I feel like you have a ton of friends of all colors and all races, and I'm one of them, and I'm honored to be your friend. But I think it's interesting when somebody as talented as you are, a speaker, the number one high school speaker in America for many years, long running, but there's a charm that you have that has let you into many, many rooms where you would be the first black person in those rooms. Would you say that's true?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So because of that, it's such a funny thing to watch. And I've seen it so much. I've seen it with my friend Michael Jr. I've seen it with other comics that I know and Christian leaders. They almost become insulated and almost are like, oh, yeah, Reggie's not black. He's Reggie. And then when you speak up for something that is a black issue, I feel like it's a human issue, but it's a black issue in the media. The like you said, some of the hate and vitriol that you've gotten is so fascinating to me to watch. And I went on there and even got in the comments on one of the guys. He was just railing on you. Like, I thought I was privileged to hear you. That's what he said. He literally said that. I thought I was privileged to hear you a couple of years ago, but now I'm rethinking it. And I commented underneath, yeah, you're privileged. All right. he opened the door and I walked through it. But I think it's fascinating. And, you know, it's like this idea that Christians should not become engaged in process or in policy processes. We should just stay out of it. I think we're blurring those lines, and it's almost used as an escapism. And I wanted you to speak to that because a quote that I read from Martin Luther King the other day was so fascinating to me. And it was kind of in retort to somebody who said, we should just stay out of this. This is all about, it's not a skin problem. It's a sin problem. All those funny, like rhyming things that we say that make us feel better and make us feel like we can deflect instead of approaching the issue. This Martin Luther King quote hit it between the head. He said, this idea that we should wait for everybody to get saved. If everybody just got saved and knew Jesus, we would all love each other. He's like, we can't wait for that. And what his quote was, he said, a law cannot make a man love me, but it can restrain him from lynching me. And I was like, boom. So this idea that like, we just got to wait around until everybody loves each other. And that's the key. It's like, no, Christians should be fighting for these laws to move forward. We should be on the front lines of justice and reform while we also teach that the way of Christ is the way of, you know, we see each other all as God, image bearers of God. Okay, that's true. But we have to meanwhile be also shaping public policy. So speak to your experience as somebody who's been kind of on the inside. You have tons and tons of people all over the spectrum, every color. But now you speak on a black issue and some of the hate you've got.
And yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, everybody has a picture of who they want Reggie to be and where they want, what they want Reggie to say and how they want Reggie to move. But you just can't remain silent to things that matter. You have to say something. And what I love about this, and I really do love, is when I did these things on social media, if you notice, rarely do I respond. I just let other people who really know Reggie respond for me, because I got enough friends out there who know who I am and where I'm from that'll pipe up. One guy, he piped up and he said this, well, y'all just proved it. He goes, first of all, I'm white. Second of all, I know who Reggie is and he's a good friend. And third, there's racism, because what some of you are saying to Reggie, I cannot believe it. But here's what I know. And he said this. I know that in the end, Reggie's going to win, because he's fought these battles before and he'll continue to fight them. But Reggie, as soon as you step out of line and don't do the saxophone and crack a joke and make people laugh and feel good about Jesus, as soon as you stand up about something that super really, really matters, they're ready to throw you out with the garbage. Right. And if they throw you out with the garbage, I'm going to come and help clean you up and put you back up on another platform. That's what we need white America to do. Not stand behind us, stand with us.
Right. Yeah. Somebody said that. One of my black friends said that. He said, we don't need advice. We need allies. So this idea that like a white person needs to come in and tell you how to run the resistance. In other words, like, well, let me tell you what you're doing wrong here. It's like, hold on a second, you know, like stay in your lane a little bit here. Let's listen. Let's learn.
Well, again, it's that white people have had, not all white people, but I guess being one, I can speak like that, but we've had the luxury of just being able to offer commentary, you know, and that keeps going back to that. Reggie, you said that to me, what, 2 weeks ago, and it really, really stuck with me. Like, you know, we don't need, I don't need my white friends, especially in ministry, sitting on the sidelines, cheering us on.
Yeah.
Like, even if we're on the right side, cheering us on, we need you on the front lines. Like, we need you out here leading with us. I remember I sent you a picture from that rally. I was like, hey, I'm here. I'm front row. You know what I'm saying?
That was
like,
awesome.
And again, that did nothing, by the way. I mean, that's just the beginning. And I know there's a great call right now online to not, I heard a guy say yesterday, like, white Christians are easily going to missions trip this whole thing. Meaning we're going to go be super involved for a week or 10 days.
Take the photo.
Yeah. We're going to be like all crying over all the stuff we're doing. And then we're just too busy, man. We got to get back to our lives. My gosh, I got so much going on. And there's that sense, especially during this COVID, crisis. Again, it's so overwhelming. And finding that way, Laura and I were talking about that, finding that way to engage and carry a weight without the gospel in my life, there's no way. This will crush me as it is crushing my black brothers and sisters. And so, like, coming to that conclusion that, look, I can stand for what's right and suffer. But, dude, nothing like what you're experiencing, Reggie. I had a white Nashville pastor that I barely even know message me after they saw my post to basically call me out for being at a rally because I was being inconsistent with the Nashville quarantine guidelines. And it just felt like that. He's I'm more in George Floyd, but this seems like an inconsistency. And I mean, I was very nice back to him. I said, I said honestly, we all wear masks, and the mayor called the meeting, or he invited people to come, and they were passing out masks, and it was at Legislative Plaza, which was so huge that we had no problem standing 6 feet apart from other people. But to be quite honest with you, is what I told him. I was a little more concerned about the inconsistency of the gospel than I was the inconsistency of the quarantine, like. That was a little more important in that moment, I think. Doesn't mean I'm not taking the other seriously. I did that. But again, diversionary sidestepping, anything but talking about this, anything but actually addressing. And I'm not saying the guy's heart's not right or in the wrong place. I can't really judge that. I can just say in that particular interaction, when I'm trying to say something online or go to be a part of something to support and maybe to lead and to speak out, that I was not supported by another white pastor in that moment, that I did not get a, man, you know what, this matters. And by the way, can they both matter? Yes, the quarantine matters. Can we figure out how to navigate this without having to only choose one cause in our life at a time? And so you think social media and videos and those things are bringing a lot of this to light, but it is also, I'll go back to what I said in the beginning, everyone's got to realize it's a limited effective conversation. It is limited in how effective it can be as an actual dialogue and interaction. And that's why it's important with whoever you do life with that you're talking about this and having uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah.
That Jesus had the uncomfortable conversation with his disciples. Why are you talking to her? Hey, let's talk about, he was speaking something to them, and it's okay to have that. If you're in Christian community, certainly have it there, in your school systems, let's have it there, but beginning to talk and educate. I mean, man, the day I saw the George Floyd video, I mean, I realized I need to shut up and educate myself more. And so I immediately got on Amazon and ordered a Martin Luther King book that I had never read and had it delivered. My wife immediately got on. We didn't even know each one of us was doing it. She got on and ordered a book about why it's so hard for white people to talk about racism. I forget the title of it, but it was dealing with these things. And like, we were just broken. Like, I don't want to be complicit. I don't want to be a part of this. Yes, I am not a racist. And to my knowledge, I've never been a racist actively or on purpose. I also have not been an ally against racism. I have not. I can speak out about it when it matters, but I've not made that a key component of the gospel. And that's what one of my friends said, Johnny. We were talking with a friend who was like, I don't know what to post. I don't know what to say. I don't want to say something wrong. I don't want to. And I said to him, one thing that we can take comfort in is who really cares what my opinion is? My opinion, that's what the whole world thinks, is that each one of our opinions is what the world needs to hear. And that's a part of the problem. My opinion doesn't matter nearly as much, and it's not as effective as what the gospel says. What we can do is we can post what the gospel says. And I posted a psalm about the oppressed being free. How long will you not bring justice and not, like, we can absolutely let the gospel and if the gospel was some Sunday school kind of sidestep religious sounding word to you, then let's talk about that. You know, like that's the problem. Like this is a radical viewpoint of love and of rescue and a restoration that cannot happen among humanity without divine intervention, and us invoking it and understanding it and believing it rightly, then we are able to speak a message that's higher than us. And perhaps even if we have to have conflict, even online, the things we say will hold. It's kind of like Samuel. God, the Bible says God let none of Samuel's words fall to the ground. That's because Samuel's words were God's words. You know, he was speaking God's words. He was a prophet. And when he's speaking God's words, then they work. So, I mean, we've found people may not like it. They may disagree and all those things. It doesn't mean we just preach and take the high road. Get involved. Be empathetic. Listen. Speak less. Listen more. Don't be wise in your own eyes and think that it's only your way that's right. Realize that perhaps something in your past, that new information may come that helps you grow. And when new information does come, don't be resistant to it. Allow yourself to move forward in growth. So that's kind of what I'm telling myself as a white guy right now. I'm going to speak the gospel at all times.
Good. And that's what we need. We just need you to stand with us, march with us, sing with us, believe with us. And the world's going to be a better place. A lot of times, and when it comes to race, we make it a Republican, Democrat, red state, blue state, right? You know, that we got to let that go. Yeah, we can vote, and that's important. We can put people in office that could change this stuff. But what it comes down to is one man helping his fellow man, one man loving his fellow man. We're in this thing together. The voting and all that stuff, that's one thing. That's separate. This is people with people. It's when you get on a plane, being kind to one another, no matter what the color of skin is. Because you know what? I believe in people more than I believe in America.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
That's why we wanted to have you on, man. You're one of the most hopeful people that I've ever been around. And you've probably seen more heartbreak in just speaking to students and dealing with people who just go through everything. Every person of every color that you deal with, man, that's the suicidal and students. I mean, they're going through, just tragedy after tragedy. And John and I were talking about that yesterday, about how does Reggie have this special gift to be able to carry all this? And it's like something that God just gave you, that you walk in and you light up this room. And that's why we wanted to talk to you. I said, we need to talk to Reggie because he's going to have a perspective on this. And also I saw how engaged you were being online and also facing some backlash. I was like, I'm fascinated by what his experience is on both sides of this right now, as a leader. And as someone who is, you do a lot of the same stuff that I do. You're in some of the same churches that I go into. And I'm fascinated by someone of color who is experiencing this, this new day. It's like we're in this moment as a country. And like you said, people are worth more even than America. America is an idea, really, when you think about it. If we're talking about borders and let's secure the world, that's one thing. But I think Bono said that from you, too. He said, America is not just a country. It's a great idea. And if we're going to say that, then like the people who live in America have to be more important than America.
Well, and that's what I told Johnny yesterday. The word politics comes from the same Latin word as people. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what populace, that's what America is, of the people, for the people, by the people. It was always about people. Governments exist to help manage people being able to live together in a way that they can, have this sense of harmony or they can coexist. And so that's not just us tearing down nationalism, though I think that maybe we could take nationalism down a lot of notches right now and not elevate ideas above people, because I am patriotic and love my country. But what we're talking about is actual definitions of what our country was started to be. That we're not really redefining it. We're just taking it back to its correct definition. So it's not meant to be some aha offensive thing. Like that's actually true. And certainly if we're believers, it's doubly true, because our highest citizenship, though we love our earthly citizenship, our highest citizenship is of a different kingdom than that. Right. And we, the other one comes first. We seek first this other one. And then and the other one calls me to be a good citizen of my earthly kingdom, wherever that may be. But I certainly am not going to elevate the idea of worshiping this other thing, above who I actually worship. So
And you know what, though? And I love this, but it does break my heart. It breaks my heart to see how this is affecting our children. You know, there's some kids who have their whole life been able to be sheltered from this, not see this, anything. Some people have posted all over a teenager. There's a teenage girl who was talking to her parents, and her parents were like, kept going, if those people would just, they just need to. And she goes, Dad, and he's a teenage girl, Dad, you're saying those people, they're just like you and me. What do you mean those people? What are you talking about? And it was just kind of funny. But then I was also like, oh, it's breaking my heart that this girl has found hope, even if it didn't come from her mom and dad. Her views were so separate from her own parents. I was like, I wonder who taught her, who showed her. That's our job. That's it, to teach everyone, whether they're in our family or not in our family, hope and love, because they got to know that there is hope and they can make it. So no matter what your background is, no matter your situation, if you in your heart say, I got to change, I got to get better, and you choose, I'm going to listen, I'm going to hear people, I'm going to hear people talking, I'm not going to come up with my own excuse, I'm not going to say but this or but that, I'm just going to listen and give hope, we're going to be better. And we are going to come out stronger after this whole event than we were before, for sure.
I believe it. Tell me this, when are you going to get back to work?
Dude, you ready for this? And you know what? It's like God messing with me. I'm going to be honest with you. So tomorrow night, we're doing a citywide, community-wide racism event. And I'm one of the panel members on it. And I was like, this is great. And we're doing it in a church that this people who live here, they call it the White People Church. And it's this. The church that's making this thing happen. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of really cool. And so I'm like, this is great. This is going to be awesome. The largest church in Indiana calls me on last Wednesday and said, I know it's last minute. We're going to fly you up. We need you to preach this weekend. I'm like, no. But I just say no because I do this. But next week, I'm in Dayton, Ohio. So I'm happy.
Next week. There you go.
First time. I'll tell you. March 3rd, first payment since March 3rd.
I definitely feel that, man. Oh, yeah, man. It felt good to be in front of live people again. So, man, and man, I'm so proud to know you, and thank God for the great work that you do. And
we told him, John, we're from the same town. We grew up in the same
Knoxville, yeah. Knoxville, Tennessee, man.
Go Vols, K-Town. And you know hey, this is my thing, you know, with the coronavirus, all this stuff that's going wrong, Tennessee made it to be number 2 in recruiting this year. We beat Alabama in recruiting, and now there's some kind of pandemic, and we probably one year we're good, and look what happens.
No, we might have to beat them all with no fans in the stands.
even if we don't play, I'm claiming victory.
That's right. That's right. We'll take it.
Oh, that's good. Well, Reg, I want to tell you, man, and we talk about community a lot on here, and I really mean this as we get ready to sign off. Like, hey, listen, I know Johnny shares this. We love you, and you have the right to speak into our lives anytime. It doesn't need to be on the air. You see us, you know, needing to have more knowledge, take a different direction, and even be corrected, man, you call us. You know, we're wanting to be discipled and taught in all areas, not just in race, but you always have that open forum to speak into our lives. And, you know, we offer it to you. We're not here to say we have all the answers, and we're going to keep learning and growing on that. And I thought of this scripture, I think it's from Thessalonians. I didn't look it up, but it's so perfect for now. If we're talking about speaking the gospel, guys, as we kind of come to our close, it says, admonish the unruly, and admonish is like a scriptural word we don't use as much anymore, but it means to correct or to be more direct with, you know, address something with. When somebody, I've been unruly, like a lot out of my thoughts, not like actively always on purpose, but it happens. And so don't be afraid to correct, and then encourage the faint-hearted. There's so many people who are faint-hearted, and Reggie, you do such a great job, and that's the call of the gospel of believers, man. Let's admonish the unruly. Let's speak truth. Let's encourage the faint-hearted. Let's help the weak is the next thing. It says help the weak. And so, man, people who are weak and struggling right now, let's not stand idly by. Let's not just pray for them, though that's a great way to help. Let's also be active and help the weak. And my favorite thing that for all of us and all of the COVID, all of the racial conversations, all of our lives right now, it says, be patient with all. Admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all. And so, man, that's just, that's our goal for Talk About That. It's our goal to live lives that are, you know, going to reflect those authentic and honest truths. And it's hard, it's messy, but we're on the path. And we certainly appreciate you guys who are listening every week. Make sure you share. Make sure if you see any of those cool little social media blurbs you see going around with little clips that you share those and like them and tell your friends about it. This may be an episode that, you know, it would be helpful for people in your own family to listen to. Send us more questions and comments. And again, we know probably, we probably are not on everybody's exact same page. Hey, be patient. Be patient. Let some things kind of marinate within you a little bit, as they are within all of us. You know, let's be slow to speak, quick to listen, and try to learn and grow together on it. But hey, Reggie, man, it means the world to us that you were on today. Is there anything you didn't get to say that you wanted to say to everybody?
I'm just happy. I'm just happy to be with my friends. It's good to see you guys. Good to hear you. Good to talk with you. But I do think that, John, we need to just go ahead and just get it out there and see if anyone can answer back in a poll if me and you should coordinate on a book on racism together.
Oh, I'd love it. It's great.
So if y'all think that would be a good idea, just give us a little feedback, would you?
And find Reggie on social media. He's all over social media. You can follow him there and find out where he's going to be. He speaks all over the world. And Reggie is somebody who when you see Reggie speak, I told John when I saw you speak in a school, I said it's like watching Muhammad Ali box in his prime. It is watching a person who is doing the thing that they were created to do. And it's unbelievable. And you've made a difference in my life. And I know you're making a difference in all kinds of people's lives. And I just I appreciate the time, man.
Absolutely, guys. Love you guys a lot.
Love you too. And listeners, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on
Talk About That.
I'm Don Hawkins, and I once heard Chick-fil-A founder Truett Cathy say, "You can tell if a person needs encouragement, check to see if they're breathing." I'd like to invite you to my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You, featuring encouraging guests like Dr. Greg and Aaron Smalley, Dan Cathy, the late Dr. Frank Menrith, Josh McDowell, and more. To subscribe to my weekly Encouragement for You podcast, go to lifeaudio.com. That's lifeaudio.com.